When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Turgis Simonsen. Before I bring him on, I want to remind you, you can always get all new regular episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. You're definitely going to want to check us out on Rockfin. This is where you get all our awesome premium content, our regular shows, and you can also get all of the premium content and regular shows from all the amazing content creators there on Rockfin. We also have our merch store up. That means you can get t-shirts and stickers and bags, all kinds of amazing stuff. Just click that link in the description or fknstore.net. And finally, do check out the great products at Ascent Nutrition. They're from the same fine folks at EMF Harmonize. They're an amazing all-natural health and nutrition company. And not only do they have great categories traditionally like vitality and energy and healthy metabolism, but you're going to see brain focus, intuition, and consciousness categories. If you are ready to optimize your meat suit, check out Ascent Nutrition. Tonight, I want to welcome Turgis Simonsen. He is a Norwegian historian of ideas and a nonfiction author specializing in the esoteric and occult. He is educated at the University of Oslo, where he has also taught introductory courses on philosophical and literary works. In the prestigious series, The Cultural Library and the World's Holy Scriptures, he has published essays on I and Thou and the First Book of Enoch, an esoteric text from antiquity. He is a full member of ESSWE, the European Society for the Study of Western Esotericism. Turgis, welcome. How are you doing today?
Thanks a lot for having me. Well, I'm fine, thank you. It's in the middle of the night here, but you know, as a writer about esoteric and occult subjects, I'm used to be up at nighttime, so it works quite well.
Oh, very good. Now, I've been looking forward to tonight. You have been a great contributor to the understanding of our hidden reality through your research and work. And I'm looking forward to talking tonight. We're going to discuss some of that research and your philosophy on the paranormal, as well as look into, you know, what really is parapsychology and occultism and the differences, and just take a look at our hidden nature of reality in general and what's behind the paranormal, because that covers a wide range of phenomenon, really. And first, I'd really love to hear more about your background and what led you to be interested in these subjects and down your path?
Well, I'm born in Kristiansand, which is a southern town in Norway, close to the coast. And I grew up very close to that town, and even smaller town called Mandal. They have a history with sea voyage and fishing and that kind of maritime activities. So I grew up here, a small town, 10,000 inhabitants about. I became member of a Christian youth club when I became in my teens. And some of those people told me about strange stories. And because I somehow trusted these people, I had no reason to believe that they were lying to me. But, you know, there were episodes of telepathy, episodes of healing, episodes of knowing the future through dreams and that kind of stuff. Not any sensational things, but, you know, something makes you wonder a bit and, that's funny. And so, and later also my family, trusted aunt and uncle told me things, and even my very rational grandfather, he was an engineer, machine engineer, and a very extremely down to earth person. But he told me that he was able to hear my grandmother before she came home about half an hour. He would got to get the sounds for her, say, approaching. And it became kind of routine for him. And it would not be at the same time of day, of course, because then it would just be kind of psychological normal expectation, perhaps. But if she was late that evening or have met some friends and went to a cafe or something, also these sounds of her approaching would come later. So it became, as I say, a matter of routine for him. So when he started hearing the sounds of her opening the door and coming up the stairs, he just went to the stove and put on the the dinner and the potatoes and that things, because then he knew from many the times of experience that she would appear about half an hour later. In Norwegian, that phenomenon is called the vardøger, and it seems to statistics shows that this phenomenon, it's known from different cultures also, but it's more common in Norway for some reason that I do not know than in other, countries. So it's called, the Norwegian national paranormal phenomenon. So Vardøger, and as I said, my grandfather told me this, my uncle and aunt told me, dream telepathy stories, and these guys in the Christian youth club told me about telepathy and healing and such things. So I always had a feeling that there had to be something more, you know. But I went to a normal study, and I get a girlfriend when I was about 21 years old, and she had extremely good intuition and was able to say things that I wondered a bit, how would that be possible to know? And she went to a kind of therapist, physiotherapist, who was extremely sensitive and also, demonstrated some abilities in telepathy. And when I started my academic career, I, by chance or by synchronicity or by higher guidance or whatever, I got as mentor Norway's foremost expert on occult phenomena. His name is Professor Jan Erik Sister Ebster Hansen, and his publication list is quite long, more than 100 publication, academic articles, books, chapters, and all that kind of things. So, and he told me that there was a kind of task waiting for the right person, writing about anthroposophy in Norway. And as you probably know, anthroposophy is the version of theosophy that was launched by Rudolf Steiner, Austrian esoteric teacher, about the turn of the century, to the beginning of the 20th century. So I went into that tradition and studied also. And as I said, he was a great expert on European esoteric and occult tradition. So he also had courses in Renaissance Hermetism. And from my own interest, I also studied the more modern Hermetism and Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, Enochian traditions, and all that kind of things. So, I made my dissertation on this anthroposophical thing. And Well, after that, I went into parapsychology also because I read some article about Norwegian psychics, and one of them, we can get back to that, it gave me a convincing demonstration of being able to tell the future and also to read minds, really, not being present and reading the subtle signs or anything like that, but through the telephone. He gave a couple of stunning examples I can come back to later. So I felt I have to go into not just the history of these things or family anecdotes and that kind, but also into the science, the natural science about these things. And that is parapsychology, where you have laboratory tests and you say have bodily scannings, you use brain scans, fMRI, and like kind of modern brain scanning equipment, and combined that with, say, philosophy of mind that is much more inclusive to all these phenomena. So after studying psychology and, somehow wanting to collect all these things in a bigger whole, I had an idea for a book. And also a friend of mine, he's an experienced psychotherapist, he told me, yes, you must make a book about this because it will be very helpful. And in fact, he bought 3 copies of my book and placed it on his ward so the young psychologist could read, you know, because so many patients tell about these phenomena. The normal, psychologist will say just, oh, that was strange, or in his silent mind will think, oh, my patient is a bit psychotic today, or this is trauma, or this is, you know, just fanciful thinking and figments and all that. But my friend, who is a very experienced psychotherapist, from his own experience, have had been convinced that these phenomena are real. So he felt it was a need in the public sphere for such a book. Of course, you have all these psychological and parapsychological articles, but that's lots of graphs and statistics and complicated material. And then you have the New Age material, but that can be a bit naive and a bit too eager to believe everything that people tell sometimes. So a balanced presentation of the whole field was what my friend suggested, and that what I hope my book has become.
Very good. You wrote, your book was a short story of nearly everything paranormal. Now,
you've got it here.
Yes. Perfect. Now, this is such a wide, broad range of phenomenon. Where do you start with this? And, you know, how do you work from there with such a wide range of phenomenon?
Well, very good question. Indeed, it's big. I start with some kind of history about parapsychology when they first start to do science about this. It would be late 1700, perhaps, in France, but later in the 1880s, especially with the Society for Psychic Research in London. That so I start with a bit of definitions coming from them about psi, which is the name, the scholarly name of these phenomena. Psi, that is telepathy, clairvoyance, precognition, and healing, and telekinesis, moving objects with the power of mind. So I start a bit with that. And also what is, common for all these phenomena seem to be the need to a reformulation of our understanding of what is consciousness, because by habit we tend to think that consciousness is something I have inside my head and you have inside your head and our viewers have inside their heads, but my idea of consciousness, which is a new idea in some way in psychology, but also a very, very old idea in philosophy, is that consciousness is a collective phenomenon. It is a shared field of information in which we all participate. And I use to make it, available easily to modern folks, I use the concept the mental internet, because we all have experienced that information can be transmitted transmitted in the split second to Australia from Norway. And we all have the experience that we can download vast information from the web. And metaphorically speaking, I think it's just the same with our consciousness. We can transmit via telepathy messages like it's split second, and we can also download via clairvoyance information about such extremely diverse matters from all over the world. So I felt the internet was a very useful metaphor to somehow relate to our everyday life how these apparently strange phenomena seem to work.
Yeah, very good. Now, you mentioned earlier that there is a strange kind of prevalence of this precognition in Norway that people have. Could you talk a little bit more about this phenomenon, maybe give some examples?
What I mentioned, there was the special kind of precognition, which is called vardøger. That is an auditive phenomenon, and that will say that you hear the sounds of an event, but quite a bit of time before that event actually happens. As I said, my grandfather, half an hour before my grandmother would come home, he would hear the sounds of her coming and, the stairway, opening the door, getting up the stairs to the second floor. But then she was not there. But half an hour later, she would come in exactly that manner that he had heard. So that is an, as a auditive precognition. By auditive sounds, you get, clear record of what is about to happen at some later time. Usually it will be from about 20 minutes to 1 hour or there around. It can be far, much more far ahead also, but that will be the typical. And as I said, sociologists of religion and that kind of folks, they have studied statistics and found that this seems to be reported quite more frequently in Norway than in other countries. And why that is, I've wondered quite a lot about, but not found out yet.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And you also were talking about consciousness earlier, and I really believe that that is central to a lot of this phenomenon.
It is.
That our consciousness, it's like you said, it's collective and it's connected to everything. And the more that I learn about, the paranormal phenomenon, the events that people have witnessed and occurred, and even some of the things in ufology, it all seems to be connected in some strange way to consciousness.
Yes.
Maybe you could talk a little bit more about the mental internet that you were talking about.
Yes, as we said, I use the description that I launch some models for chiropractic reasons. You know, when you go to a chiropractor, they will crack a knee on some stiffened muscles and joints, and to make them more flexible. Also, I launch five different models as an alternative to this, say, conventional model that consciousness is something you have inside your head, or we have just inside our own heads. The mental internet, as I said, is a metaphor for that consciousness is a shared field of information. And if you think of consciousness that way, telepathy is no wonder at all, because it is already in this field. When I make a thought, it is already uploaded and available to you. And also, as I said, memories from earlier generations, they are uploaded on the mental web, and the sensitive people, we call them psychics, are able to at least sometimes download this information. I can give you a very specific example.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'll try to, as I said, my English is not my first language, so I have to somehow translate it inside my head here. But as a friend of mine, he is from the Philippines, and he is quite psychic. And he runs a cafe, and right before I went to his cafe one day, I had been to another cafe that I do not usually visit at that time of day. And I went to the Philippines cafe, and you know, I know he's quite psychic, so I tried to test him. So I used a little tricky question about something that had happened yesterday, and decided, could you tell me what happened then and then yesterday? And he just looked a bit on me and said, no, I'm sorry, I cannot do that. And then he went over to make some coffee to me. And then he came back, and then he stared to me with a kind of sly smile. And he asked, running this other cafe today that I had been to earlier, you know. I had not told him I've been to this other cafe. He have not been able to see it from his windows because it's an other place in town. And so he asked me who was, say, on guard, taking in the money, doing the waiting at the tables on this other cafe today. And I said, how could you know that I have been to this other cafe today? And he just laughed and he said, I get it in my consciousness as a memory. And so it was my memory of having been there was shared with him. So he was able to download my memory. That's just a very simple example of this. But you see, when I have been there, I have a story, I have feelings, I have thoughts, I have inner pictures. They are all immediately uploaded on the mental internet, and he, being extremely sensitive, is able to download them immediately also. So, as I said, internet is a metaphor because there are no wires and kind of that, but consciousness have that collective shared nature as also the internet have. And this is just a very simple example. I can give you lots and lots of examples.
And you think that everyone has this ability to transmit and download this information. It's just a matter of learning how to tap into that, right?
In principle, everybody. But as I used the example with music, everybody has some sense of music. You know, if there is an orchestra marching on the national day, most people will be able to keep pace with the orchestra. And
some just have a natural talent that's a little bit better.
Beethoven, how much I will train music or you will train music, we will never become Beethoven.
Right.
So, yes. So there's two factors. In principle, everybody is telepathic. Everybody is clairvoyant because it's not connected to the ego. It's connected to the basic level of consciousness that transcends the ego, which we all share, probably also animals and perhaps even plants. So it's much more fundamental than the ego. And because we all are connected, we all have telepathic abilities and we all have clairvoyant abilities. But from there, that it's talent. And it's training. And talent is a given that might be genetics very often. You see these things run in families. And then it's training. How much do you develop this? Guy I've consulted sometimes, he is very sensitive and very impressive. But he said he knew he could do these things when he was 7 years old. But it was very impractical because when he was in a queue with five people, it would start easily coming information from this other people, you know, their life stories and so. So it would be confusing. So he's somehow learned to shut out all this information. But for some reason, he got a midlife crisis after a divorce, and then he decided somehow to look closer. And for the last 40 years or so, he's been living as a professional clairvoyant. So talent and training and also will to this. And some people, perhaps for religious reason, I come from Christian background, and some Christian people are very skeptical about it. They think this is the work of the devil and something like that. And other people are just scared about, I knew that I was going to get a visit from that guy, and there he is. Oh, no, I cannot have anything to do with that, you know. So fear is also part of why people shut down these things. But in a harmonious way, I think it's very beneficial to start to develop a kind of a kind of sense and taste for these things. The Buddhists have, for instance, a very long tradition and not denying these phenomena, but making them part of a harmonious growth as a whole person.
And you mentioned, you know, how some people think this is of the devil and it's evil. Well, I want to talk a little bit about, occultism and magic and basically the ability for some to manipulate the reality and in certain ways and energy. And I guess that is what you would call magic.
Yes,
and
it is.
There's, we have ritual magic, and there's certain aspects of manifestation and sigil magic and all kinds of different things that we can look at, all these different practices that are taking, I guess, this paranormal psi phenomenon a step further than just, you know, psychic connections. It's actually learning how to, you know, manipulate some of these things at will. So what do you think is, I guess, going on when people are using magic and connecting to these energies be able to kind of manipulate reality and achieve manifestation, things of this nature?
Yes, I in principle, I think it's nothing wrong with it because if you want to build a chair, for instance, you go there and you take the hammer and you take the wood and you take the nails and you do the work, really. And also, if there's something you want to achieve, to use the mental tools available to achieve that result, I think that's just fair and square and not problematic. The problem is, of course, if you use these things to gain power and to exploit other people financially or sexually or psychologically, and all that kind of power games. That's very dubious. And as I said, the Buddhist tradition have a very discerning way of dealing with this phenomena, because you can get a kind of inflated ego and, I'm a great prophet, I'm a great magician and all that kind. So one of my favorite esoteric or occult organization is called Servants of the Light. And that's a modern offspring of this hermetic order of the Golden Dawn. And when you are initiated in that order, they will ask you the question, why do you want to join this order? And then the correct answer you should supposed to give is, I want to know in order to serve. So if your goal is to serve humanity, to serve the human race, and to serve life on this planet, I think it's wonderful to use these things. But if it's just for ego gratification, you should rather do something else.
Now, when it comes to these, especially, I guess, ritual magic, and where you actually have to get in touch with, I guess the only way to put it would be entities that are unseen or beyond the spectrum of our vision, would you think that would be dangerous in any way? I mean, I imagine it would depend on what entities you're trying to contact, but I think that even, you know, if you're not well versed in this, if you could make a mistake and, you know, some of these entities may deceive you if you're trying to, you know, contact them. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think the foremost, let's start with the most important, that's intention. What are your intention? And as I said, if your intention is to serve your fellow man and woman and to serve the planet and serve life, you know, then you are my say perception of these things, then you are protected by that intention. But these entities, you say, if you are hanging out with neo-Nazis or if you are hanging out with Islamists, of course that's not a good company to keep, because that will influence you and they could even lure you into actions otherwise not in your repertoire. Just the same, if you contact some kind of what they call the left hand path, you know, the dark path, you know, and contact entities that historically have been used for, say, bad purposes, I think that could hurt your psyche, because somehow the intention is the crux here, because that gives you the compass and the direction. So as long as your intention is good, that's a talisman for you that will protect you. But if your intention is ego and power and that kind of things, you could easily, I think, connect with destructive entities. Basically, if we go philosophically into this, you know, from the Indian tradition of Advaita, you know, non-duality, a non-dividedness, basically it's just one being. The totality of being is one at the bottom. All entities, we, the dinosaurs, the spirits, the ascended masters, whatever, is basically part of, say, the unity deep down. That's Advaita. There's no non-duality. So when you contact one aspect of that, say, basic reality, that be a spirit or that be a person or that be an animal or whatever, somehow it's no different than to do your daily work, you know. It's people, I think, tend to people place too much weight on the entities themselves. I think you should say, go for your own, cultivate your own good intentions, and then you will see which entities are drawn to you. Say, if you participating in neo-Nazi meetings or Islamist radicalization groups, you know, look what kind of people you're connecting with. It's the same, you know, go for the intention and the entities will be no problem as long as your entities are good. If your entities are your intentions are bad, the entities you connect with will also be tend to be bad, I think.
How do you think modern day academia and science feels about, say, parapsychology? Do you think that they're becoming more open to this, to these fields?
Yeah, of course, it's a mixed bag, and many things are not being, say, discussed in an open-minded manner. But the basic phenomena we are talking about, telepathy, clairvoyance, precognition, healing, and telekinesis, psychokinesis, they are, in fact, discussed seriously. The most prestigious magazine, a journal for psychology in the world, is called American Psychologist, and it's released by the American Psychological Association, APA. And in 2018, in the May issue, there is an article. It's called Parapsychological Phenomena. The Experimental Evidence for Parapsychological Phenomena Review. And that's written by Professor Essel Cardenia, who has published about 300 scientific articles. And when the most prestigious magazine for psychology in the world take in, say, an article in defense of these phenomena, of course, it's taken seriously. So I would say, of course, conventional psychologists are still much in the former paradigm, but there is what kind of avant-garde psychology are taking these phenomena, starting to take them quite seriously. And also because a study of the philosophy of mind and, say, the theories of consciousness have evolved. For instance, quite a number of quantum physicists are interested in, say, the implications of consciousness for physics. We can discuss some experiments that will illustrate that point. But in quantum physics, there are quite a number of people interested in consciousness. So, as I said, basically these phenomena, all the paranormal phenomena, are, say, derivatives of an expanded vision for what is consciousness. So when the quantum physicist, and also, as I said, this very well-renowned, prestigious psychological journal print articles in defense of this expanded consciousness, I think it's fair to say at least they are starting to take it seriously.
And you mentioned some quantum physics experiments that we could cite. I know that there are some exciting developments when it comes to quantum physics and looking into paranormal phenomenon and the connections there. So what are some of these experiments that we can look at?
I will start with an early experiment. It's a very simple but very, say, basic. If you say, just make it simple, if you collide two electrons, from that collision, it will produce two photons, which is particles of light, and that they are called twin photons because they were born at the same moment. And those twin photons from this collision, they will hurtle off in a directly opposite direction. And the strange thing is, if you measure them, say 10 kilometers apart, and one of them is then going up, the other one will go down. And if one of going to the right, the other one will go left. And the first one go down, the second one will go up. So they mirror each other, even if they are physically totally split apart. And as I said, many, many kilometers, and even at the opposite sides of the universe, they will still behave in this connected way. That is what they call non-locality. And that is not a theory that is demonstrated in at least three laboratories. So we know this to be true. And if we can see that photons are connected in this way, and they are acting as a unity, even if for all, say, common sense purposes are totally divided, that might perhaps also say something about the nature of consciousness. Because if they are connected over big distances, why not consciousness is connected over big distances as well? I will not say this experiment proves that consciousness is but connected in that same way. But at least it opens up, because it says that our normal idea about space is totally, say, beyond the pale, really. It's demonstrably wrong to view space the common sense way. So, and that is a very important experiment that was made first by a guy, Johan Klauser, in he was at Berkeley. And 10 years later, it was done in a more famous and more, say, splendid way by a French physicist called Alain Aspect. He became quite famous for this experiment. So it's sometimes just referred to as the Aspect experiment. And this is a basic quantum physics experiment showing that our normal idea about space is totally wrong, really, and might have a big implication for consciousness. Also, there has been done experiments with what they call the double split experiment.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And if you fire electric, it's done in a different version, but you fire electrons to a wall and you have two slots or splits in that wall. It seems to be able to somehow, by intention, steering how many, or at least to direct the stream of electrons if they should go more to the right split or to the left split. As I said, there are many experiments here, but that is one of them, that your intention somehow seemed to be statistically significantly influencing the stream of electrons. And that would be, of course, a kind of telekinesis or psychokinesis, then mind over matter in a way. And Dean Radin is quite famous for having doing and presented some of these experiments.
And when you're looking at consciousness, when I look at it and I'm looking at things like telekinesis, I can go back to that everything, even, you know, inanimate objects may have some kind of consciousness. If we look at telekinesis and the way the ability to connect with these objects and even move them, it has to be, you know, I believe maybe connected to some kind of consciousness frequency. I don't know. What do you think about that? What do you think is happening with this telekinesis?
Very interesting phenomenon. It was, let me say that many parapsychologists say that they do not have yet a theory that fully account for these phenomena. So many parapsychologists will confess that. Some think they have a good explanation. For instance, there's a German parapsychologist. He's a doctor in psychology and is also a doctor in physics, Walter von Lukadu. He thinks of this as a kind of what systems theory, that everybody is connected to everything else. And if you say do some action in one part of the system, it will via quite complex chains of causality influence everything else in the system, really. So that is his take on it. And he is, as I said, a doctor in physics and doctor in psychology, and quite famous. He's not famous in the Anglosphere, the English-speaking world, but in Germany he has been to many television programs. And he also had an office at the university, or connected with the university at Freiburg, where you could come to him if you had problems with poltergeist. You know, you're coming home and your furniture is turned upside down and it's a wild chaos, and you go to the insurance company and say, please give me some compensation here because poltergeist have turned my flat upside down, and they will not believe you. But in Germany, they might have believed you, because Walter von Lukadu was contacted in many such cases and gave, say, convincing evidence to the authorities that these phenomena are really happening. And as I said, he explains this out, his version of systems theory. It's quite complex, but people can check. He has some lectures on YouTube, and also possible to find his website and all the things. But if we go back to what I said earlier, Advaita, perhaps there is a unity behind all this. And perhaps, therefore, our, say, division, we say mind and matter, but perhaps that's just our limited perspective, because behind mind, behind matter, there is this unity. That was Carl Gustav Jung called unus mundus, from with alchemical concepts, one world. And Carl Gustav Jung wrote a book together with a famous physicist, Wolfgang Pauli. It's called Synchronicity. And then Jung wrote an essay about, say, the psychological aspect, and Pauli wrote about the physical aspect. He won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1945. And he himself, being great physicist, he himself had experienced lots of telekinetic phenomena. And so he knew from his own experience, and he's written about this, that these phenomena are real. And he is very cautious. He was called the consciousness of science, because he was always very cautious and very critical of jumping to conclusions. But he said it would be very comforting if it behind the matter and mind was in fact this unity. So I feel somehow the best suggested explanation, that there is a unity behind mind and matter, and if you do activities then in your mind, you are really also working deep downside on what lies behind matter, and that might on occasions give strange phenomena as a result.
Now, I don't know if this is along the same lines, but I've seen videos of Chi Masters generating so much heat with their hands that they can actually set paper and stuff on fire. It's very, very fascinating. Now, do you think this is kind of along the same lines as this Psi phenomenon?
Yes, but I will not subscribe to everyone, of course, claiming they can do this, that they really can do this. Yes. But to get back to this Walter von Lukadu, the German parapsychologist, he uses an example, in fact, where a woman experiences small flames, you know, suddenly starting to show in her flat. And that was a spontaneous kind of poltergeist phenomenon. But Walter von Lukadu do not think this spirits, geists behind this. He felt it was because he's talked to this woman and he found that she was suffering from a pathological jealousy, really. So he felt it was kind of an external manifestation of her internal burning jealousy, because very often these phenomena, I see you smiling, because they have very often a symbolic representative function. So she was literally burning from jealousy, which manifested in small flames in her flat. Of course, theoretically speaking, you could imagine that a Tai Chi master, having cultivated his, say, or her focus through many years of intense practice, would be able at will to produce some of these effects. I know it's claimed. I've seen some Qi demonstration that have been quite... we have a guy in Denmark, and I've seen in my hometown, he demonstrated some skills, really. Not the flame thing, but other things. But I don't know, because, of course, via film tricks and everything, you know, and people want to become famous and all that. So, in principle, it's possible. Whether or not those claim to do it can and actually do it, I will not say.
Now, while we're talking about people who, you know, are a little fraudulent and want to be just become famous, there are, unfortunately, this kind of field is prevalent with those kind of people, especially when it comes to psychic phenomenon, telekinesis, all this stuff, because it is easy to fake these days, especially with videos. But even if you have, you know, just a little bit of intuition, it's easy to kind of pull one over on people and do fraudulent activity. So what's the best way that people can kind of discern what they're looking at here?
That's, of course, very difficult, because if the professional magicians, they are so clever. So, but I have always enjoyed magicians, you know, stage magic. So I have been to lots and lots of performances with stage magician. I also read some theory. I'm not clever, of course, I'm not professional, far from it. But also watched quite a lot of videos with magicians. There's an English guy, he made quite furore also in the US, Darren Brown, lots of videos with him on YouTube. So people can check and you can somehow get a feel of, and he's very impressive and convincing. So if the psychic does just the same tricks that you saw Darren Brown doing last night, of course you should be a bit cautious. But I would imagine people should also, you know, one of the most famous, he's not really famous as a parapsychologist, but he's a professor at Cornell University in psychology, Daryl Bem, and he was convinced by statistics, going to the statistics, you know, most people are not into statistics in the way he is, but after reading it through experiment after experiment, he found that the statistics were so convincing that he somehow, he was a skeptic, and he is also a magician, a stage magician, so he, you can find some tricks with him on YouTube. So he knew all the tricks in the book, really. But statistics from parapsychological sound experiment under strict conditions, you know, controlled conditions in laboratories, convinced him. And he had went on to make his own experience. And he published also a very famous article about these experiments. It's called Feeling the Future. future. And to make the shortcut here, just nine experiments with the most famous, with 50 of his students demonstrating they were able to see on a screen, which there were neutral pictures and there were erotic pictures. And the student with a strong margin were able to say when there will appear an erotic picture on the screen. Of course, then you take the students, the young people, you know, and probably, hopefully interested in erotics, you know, would have their antennas out for this kind of information. And BEM made a very good case for they were, in fact, able to detect the upcoming eroticism. Excuse my English, yeah, please.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm that's really interesting.
It is. And also, obviously, if you go to back to these phenomena, if you think of them as in primordial times, it would be very nice to know when the partner, a possible partner, was around the corner, and also to detect danger, you know. So if you think these are part of our basic survival kit, it would be an excellent way of using them to avoid danger, the people or lions or whatever, or find a suitable partner for you. So I think they will somehow. I write quite a lot about crisis telepathy in my book, and then you see that very often these phenomena kick in when there is danger around, and I think that is a kind of alarm system from primordial times. Of course, there's a spiritual aspect of this as well, but as I said, if they have not helped us, we would probably not be having them. So I feel also that this naturalistic way of looking at these phenomena, it can be very helpful. As I said, there's a spiritual aspect connecting us to the bigger picture also, but we also are physical beings, you know, living in a world that can be dangerous sometimes, and we need those little extra antennas and the information they can help us.
It seems like our ancients probably had a much better understanding and maybe even better abilities when it came to this. There's a lot of researchers pointing at evidence that, our ancient ancestors did have these abilities, and it was more prevalent, and we kind of lost that over the ages. Is that something that you think is probably the case?
Yes, I think that's probably the case. And you see that with indigenous people, for instance, the Sami people in northern Norway, they have a strong culture for these phenomena, you know. And that might be genetics to some part, but also culture and lifestyle, you know. If you have a quiet lifestyle, then it's much more easy. If it's lots of TVs all around and cars honking, you know, and all that loud noise from a metropolis, then it will be difficult to perceive those subtle signals from the Psi field. And also, if you have a strong culture, the Sami culture, you know, of course, many of them are quite modern people also, you know, computer engineers and all that. But the traditional Sami lifestyle, they would learn you to have regard and respect and to heed these phenomena, you know, and take it seriously. And they would not just dismiss this as a coincidence and like that. And of course, as we said earlier in the program, talent and training. And if you are trained from your child to really listen into these frequencies here, it's much more likely that you will develop competence in this field. So if I could give you some perspective on this, because some people said it's just bad that we lost this, that our ancestor had. But Rudolf Steiner, this guy, Austrian esoteric teacher, he said it's not bad. It's a part of our, complete development as a species. Because if we are just connected with spirit world, we will not take the material world seriously on its own premises. But we need, as a species, to learn mathematics, to learn the engineering arts, and all these kind of things, to master the physical on the physical premises. So Steiner felt it was in fact useful and necessary, even for a period of a couple or perhaps 3 or 4 or 5 thousand years that we dive into the material world and learn how to master that world. And then we can, from a kind of new perspective, open up again to the more spiritual perspective.
Right. Do you see that kind of happening now and kind of integrating both the scientific world and the world of occultism?
I like to see that, I think. Yes, as I said, those quantum physics being in the most famous was this book, The Tao of Physics by Fritjof Capra. He wrote it early in the 70s. But as I said, in this journal, most prestigious in the world on psychology, that they will print an article defending the existence of these phenomena. It's quite... something really. It speaks volumes. So I think so. And also these more green movements in the different countries, you know, you think more holistic about our place on Earth and even the Earth's place also in the cosmos, astrophysics. And so I'm quite optimistic about this, but it's not a fast process. But
It's not overnight.
No.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We live in fascinating times. I want to talk a little bit about Enochian magic because it's very interesting to me. It's supposed to be, I guess, basically communication with angels, right?
Yeah, right.
Yes. Could you tell us a little bit about, what's the basics of Enochian magic, I guess, as much as you could break it down for us?
Well, you know, it's a long, where to start then? If we start in antiquity, you have, of course, in the Jewish tradition, you have a Moses. He is the supreme revelator, and of course, in Christianity, you have Christ as the supreme revelator of God's will, and so. But there was a tradition in Judaism where not Moses was the central figure, but rather Enoch, the patriarch from Old Testament, and it's written about Enoch that in the Old Testament that God took him. And what does that mean? And the Jewish tradition, esoteric tradition, the Kabbalah, they will often read it in the same way as the tradition about the prophet Elijah, because it's written in the Old Testament that Elijah was taken up to heaven directly in a wagon with fiery wheels, like a storm of fire taking him to heaven. That also Enoch was taken directly to heaven. Okay, but if Moses have to die on earth and be dug, buried and like a normal man, and Enoch goes straight to heaven, probably Enoch has more knowledge about the heavenly mysteries than Moses then. That was the thinking. So it became a tradition around Enoch, and also became a tradition in antiquity how you could somehow journey to heaven. There were some breathing exercises and also the recitation of angelic names. You found these traditions in Qumran, the kind of what you could say a kind of monastery where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. There you have rituals, you are reciting the angels' names for a long time, and you have reading, you're sitting in a special what they call Elijah's position. You close down like you are having your head between your legs, and of course if you sit like that and doing breathing exercises and reciting these angelic mantras for hours and hours, something will happen to your consciousness, so there are lots of these say visions from antiquity. It's called it's also part of a Christian tradition via Revelation of John, the last book of the New Testament. There you can see John having these heavenly visions also. The Enochian tradition is a visionary tradition from antiquity. The more modern Enochian magic, it goes back to Elizabethan England, where there was a famous mathematician and magician called John Dee. And John Dee is an extremely interesting figure. He is, as I said, he helped the British ship navigate on the seven seas. He made, stellar charts. And he
the real 007.
Well, he at least gave... the day for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth I, you know. So it's to make her, and he seems to have succeeded quite well because her reign was long and strong. But he had an assistant, his name was Edward Kelly. And the spiritual communication between John Dee, the famous mathematician and magician, and the more, say, not simple man, but you know, he was not educated like John Dee, but he was very gifted. He could also have some fraudulent sides, but you know, he somehow transmitted messages from these angels, and Dee wrote them down and made system out of them. And there they received some tablets with names and figures and numbers and so. So this is supposedly coming directly from heaven. So there also is a long esoteric tradition, forbidden knowledge with heavenly tablets that go back to Babylon, really. So, but the modern version of Enochian magic is these tablets received by Edward Kelly and John Dee. And has played a part in the occult revival in modern times. For instance, Aleister Crowley, he performed Enochian magic. And you can even go to YouTube and they have recorded some of his Enochian chants and masses for the first ether, you know, and all these kind of things. I would say tendency, because basically it's a good tradition, you know, it's about knowing God and expanding your horizon to include the angels in your worldview. But regrettably, it has become part of, I would not say black tradition, but more great tradition. And even Crowley said you should be a bit careful about it. He mentioned an episode with things coming out of control. So it's becoming a kind of, you know, the magician's apprentice here. You could perhaps connect to traditions. So I would not recommend starting with Enochian magic unless you are very well versed in occult arts from other tradition, have a solid training from a sound lodge, you know, just dabbling into it. I would not recommend it, but it's a powerful and interesting tradition.
Now, as far as angels go, what is, I guess, your idea of what an angel is, do you think it is actually this celestial entity that exists beyond the spectrum of our vision, or more of just this conscious energy that kind of exists, or something else? What is your idea of what an angel is?
It's very difficult. Some people are, as I said, my book is about telepathy, clairvoyance, and precognition, and healing, and psychokinesis, telekinesis. That is the main thing. I talk a bit about spirits and angels in my book, but basically, I will say I do not know. So I wonder if my next book should be about angels. I've discussed this with a very famous magician, really. You probably know him, Herbie Brennan. Yes, he is also a novelist, fantasy novelist, been on the New York Times bestseller list. And so he is training, and he be quite, high up in the order of this Servants of the Light, really. And he has written about these things and discussed it. And he was reluctant to give a kind of to commit himself to a perspective here. So I will not say that he said what he just said. The tradition holds that it is angelic, heavenly beings and all that kind of things. But if again, for the third time, go back to Advaita. If the world basically is a unity, then also these angels will be part of that unity and be a frequency in that unity. As I am a frequency, you are a frequency, the dinosaur were frequencies, the fish are frequencies, you know, the moon, the sun are frequencies in this big, say, cosmic concert, really. Perhaps that's the best approach to it. And if you approach them as a person, you will get personally answer, but from that frequency. But if it is, say, an entity that can act on its own, I don't know that. it seems on some occasions that these will take action on their own, but perhaps it's more our own, you know, if it kind of echo, if you relate to you, say people in the earlier the Viking tradition, they would say when they heard the thunder and saw the lightning, it was Thor in a way. Of course, the phenomena are real, but was it Thor behind this? Of course, it's energy, it's frequencies, but the personalization of it as Thor, is that justified? Probably not. What we meet as angels in the say, paranormal world, when you see a ghost going through or, you know, some light manifesting, will that be a person? I do not know. I would be very interesting to find more about. And as I said, my next book might be about these things.
That's very interesting.
But just as I said, this non-dualistic perspective, I think, can be very helpful because we tend to somehow absolutize one level or one frequency or one plane of reality. Basically, I think it is a unity down there. So I'm more, for instance, I read an interview with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, you know, the guy who brought transcendental meditation to the West. And he was asked about some of this. And he said, of course, from his Indian tradition, you could say, contact some of these entities, you could pray to them. But why would you do that? Why wouldn't you go to the source of being through meditation? You know, that's the unity behind it. You know, these entities could also have their whims, you know. So why would you somehow give yourself in the hands to those entities? Why don't you go to the unlimited source behind all manifestation through meditation? I think I kind of like that perspective.
Yes, I agree. And I've actually spoken to a few guests about that very thing, reaching source through meditation and things of that nature. Now, to close out, earlier we were talking about how you were hopeful that mainstream science and academia is kind of catching up to these things and it's going to become more of a mainstream thing and not so woo-woo of a topic. I'm hopeful for that too. And I do see a lot of that happening. You know, I see a lot of you know, even government agencies kind of looking into paranormal hotspots and things of this nature.
And the release, sorry for interrupting you, but the release of the UFO, they found
as well
144 cases, and it was just one of them that could be accounted for in normal ways, conventional ways. So that leaves us with 143, unaccounted for cases, and that came from the Pentagon.
That's right. Yeah. So it makes me hopeful that, you know, mainstream academia and science will possibly come around. And one day all of this is just going to be, you know, looked into as a normal part of our existence. And we can have a better understanding of it. And hopefully that'll occur soon. What do you think? That you think that within the next few years or even our lifetime, we may see more of this occurring?
Yes, I think so. Let's just start with common experience. Statistics show that more than half of grown-up people will have experiences of, say, telepathy and clairvoyance and that kind of phenomena. So many people have these experiences. My mentor at the university, he told me the only reason why it's not somehow taken more seriously, that is, there has been the lack of, comprehensive theory that can make sense of these things. As it's just diverse, one Peter tells about one experience and Paul tells about another experience. So to get a unified understanding of the field, and therefore, in my very simple way, I launched the model of the mental internet. When I think in, so I go to his Facebook page and then I can see what he's been doing lately. And so, you know, so if you think of this like a mental internet, and I mentioned this very important article in American Psychologist, There are also two other articles in mainstream psychological journals in more recent times that somehow supports the impression that it's just not a fluke or just a kind of happy coincidence that this article reached the pages. And also quantum physics, the redefining of our understanding. And I will mention also last year, the Nobel Prize winner in physics, Roger Penrose. He is, of course, a physicist, but he is also a philosopher of mind. I think it's about 30 years ago, he wrote a book called The Emperor's New Mind, and how he did not feel that conventional theories about mind did account for how mind was created and working. And he has an American co-worker, Stuart Hamrath, who is an anesthesiologist at the University of Arizona. And Hamrath has said that you can find interviews with him on YouTube. He feels that quantum physics will probably account for telepathy. And Sir Roger Penrose, he has said in an interview that he feels that their model of consciousness allows for precognition. So when a Nobel Prize winner in physics can say such a thing, you know, then it's happened quite a lot. And we have, as I said, also some of them earlier. Wolfgang Pauli, I mentioned, who had experienced so much telekinesis in his own life. This was quite recently. He won the Nobel Prize last year. And as I said, Stuart Hameroff has defended telepathy, saying it's probably based on non-locality. So, yes, I'm quite hopeful about that. But I used to quote Max Planck, who also was a pioneer in quantum theory. He said, science progresses funeral by funeral. So, yes. Yeah. So it sounds a bit gruesome, but I think the old researchers have to more or less die out, because people are identified with the paradigm. They have tenured for yes. They have scholarships. They have grants. You know, they have written lots of books. They have identified, their life's work with this old paradigm. So I think when that is somehow just peacefully dying away because of time, then it will be much more easy to reformulate a new paradigm for consciousness. What we see in quantum physics, in philosophy of mind, and also in some mainstream psychological journals.
Yeah, we're definitely living in exciting times. There is some great things happening, some concerning things, but all very fascinating at the same times. And Terje, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Before you go, let everyone know where they can find a short history of nearly everything paranormal. There it is.
Yes, there it is. It's a beautiful cover, I think. We worked several months to get it right. They can go to Amazon. That's quite simple. My name, Terje Simonsen, and the book, A Short History on Everything Paranormal. And I will use the opportunity to say it has received two awards in the US. It has received the Parapsychological Book Award and also received a Silver Nautilus Award. So it is an award-winning book, and also recommended by the greatest voice in parapsychology today. I think it will be Dean Radin and also Jeffrey Mislov, Stanley Krippner, and other great guys. You know, I am a popularizer. They are the researchers. I am trying to somehow connect those great guys with more, say, common folks. So I hope I able to present things in a funny and what is called approachable manner.
Yes, very good. Terje, thank you so much again. That was fantastic information. And there's so much more we could talk about, so I'd love to have you back on in the future.
Thank you. I would love to come back later also. So thanks for having me.
That's great. All right. Well, until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll see you again tomorrow night.